Listen, Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
I pledge no allegiance, nigga. Fuck the president's speeches. I'm baptized by America and covered in leeches. The dirty water that bleaches your soul and your facial features, drowning you in propaganda that they spit through the speakers. And if you speak about the evil that the government does, the Patriot Act to track you to the type of your blood. They try to frame you and say you was trying to sell drugs and throw a federal indictment on niggas to show you love. This shit is run by fake Christians, fake politicians. Look at their mansions and look at the conditions you live in. All they talk about.
Welcome back to Nolan's Legal Radio, part of CKUT's Off the Hour at 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca on the web. We're a grassroots community radio on the island of Montreal. That's, of course, Immortal Technique with Eminem and Mos Def, the tune Tell the Truth. We're going to talk now about three men, and we'll be hearing the voices of three men who were essentially a rendition to torture. And when we talk about the complicity of the Canadian government, this isn't meant to say there's a degree of separation. There's no degree of separation when you hear about these cases. Canada knew and actually took advantage of it and actually wanted the torture to happen. Most of our listeners, most of the Canadian public are probably familiar with the case of Maher Arar. And there are three cases that are essentially three other Arar cases, the other Arars, or the Iacobucci Three. And Mary, through the work with the People's Commission on Immigration Security Measures, you've researched this. You've worked with these folks. So, who are the Iacobucci Three? Who are these other Arars?
As you mentioned, they had very similar experiences to Maher Arar, in which they were detained either in Syria or in Egypt or both. And with it seems the knowledge of Canada in imprisoning them, or the complicity or the active role of Canada in imprisoning them in the first place, and then the active role of CSIS, the Canadian spy agency, in interrogating them when they were there, as in the case of Maher Arar, CSIS didn't seem to want to bring them back home to Canada, as in the case of Abu Sufyan Abdulrazik that we talked about before. There was an attempt to block them coming back to Canada. They did make back to Canada, and they have asked for an official inquiry into the role of Canadian officials into their cases, into their torture and detention in other countries. But the government had learned from the Maher Arar inquiry that these inquiries should be kept secret. So the inquiry in their case is kept almost entirely secret. The report will be coming out on or before the 20th of October. We can imagine that's going to come out after the election period, timed strategically. Then we'll have a little more information about what happened to them. But people should try to read in and find out a lot more about them, because there's actually other names that are coming to light too. And I think one of the biggest things that we're up against in groups like, or initiatives like the People's Commission and the Torture Canada series, is this idea that Canada doesn't do stuff like that. So we talk about it and people say, well, maybe it's an exception. There was, you know, it happened once, Maher Arar, but we've tried to put things to right. We had a national inquiry. We gave them a lot of money. But that's, in fact, not the case. And when you dig deeper, you see that, you know, Canada very much is like that, and that's one of the things we're trying to break through and we're up against
Well, we're essentially exposing this period after 9/11 in 2002, 2003, even to 2004, right up until today, but definitely in that period where I remember at the time, Canadians were sort of self-congratulatory that we weren't building prison camps for Arab men like we did for the Japanese during World War II, but we're now learning that several people, and as you said, there's others probably that we haven't even heard of, were treated in a horrible fashion, in indignant fashion. So let's hear from one of these men who's quite outspoken, Abdullah Al-Malki, who was opportunistically renditioned. He's a Canadian Syrian. He was visiting his grandmother, who he hadn't seen for a long time, imprisoned by the Syrian authorities, and basically the Canadian government. And we should name these agencies, the Canadian Security and Intelligence Service and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, together exploited that situation, not to bring Abdullah al-Malki back to Canada and put him on trial for something. And let's keep that in mind. There's always a cloud hanging over these men. If we think they've done something, put them on trial. In any case, they didn't want to bring him back. They wanted to exploit the horrendous torture that he was facing. So this is an interview that I did with Abdullah al-Malki just a few days ago. It's a short excerpt. The full excerpt will be on in a few days or in a few weeks. The People's Commission website, that's peoplescommission.org, as well as the No One's Legal blog. But let's hear that interview with Abdullah al-Malki right now. Abdullah, reading about your case is harrowing. Most Canadians are now familiar with the case of Meher Arar, and of course, what happened to Meher Arar is similar. You were tortured in a Syrian jail for more than a year. You were detained without any cause. But I guess what's worse, if that's possible, is that this seemed to be done at the behest of the Canadian government and Canadian security agencies. And of course, that doesn't make the Canadian government and Canadian security agencies indirectly involved with torture. That makes them completely complicit in torture. So I'm wondering if you can explain to our listeners exactly how the Canadian government and Canadian security agencies were involved in your ill treatment, in your degradation in torture chambers in Syria.
To start off and put things in context, I'll go in a very, very quickly, and in a few minutes over a number of pieces of facts that we have now. And I will start off by the time before leaving Canada. I've been under investigation by CSIS of at least since 1998. Now, as time progressed, and especially after 9/11, things got really terrible. The harassment by the security agencies became unbearable for myself and my family. And I'm talking here harassment, including installing camera across our house, having a number of cars following me anywhere I go, and I had five, six cars following me all the time. My wife had about two cars. People would follow us any place we go to, be it a bank, be it a grocery shop, and my wife, at that time, she was even outraged even more, and until now, we cannot understand why they even followed her into the kids' section in the public library, a place where she often goes to, and we still wonder what they were expecting her and my kids, who they were, the oldest was 6 years old, were going to find in that kids section in the public library. Things got really terrible, and we felt that we were squeezed out of the country. We were forced to leave the country. So we decided to take a break and visit my in-laws in Malaysia. Now, things in Malaysia didn't stop. I was stopped for a few hours in Malaysia, and I was asked questions. And when I protested the treatment and being stopped, singled out, and being interrogated, they told me, well, don't blame us. It's the government whom you are holding its passport asked us to do this. So it was clear that the Canadian government was behind even Malaysia, that the information were sent to Malaysia, and I was being questioned in Malaysia based on that information. Now, later on in May 2002, I was visiting Syria, and I wanted to see my grandmother, whom I had not seen for many, many, many years, maybe more than 10 years, and she was really sick and ill, and I was on a business trip in that region. I took that trip to Damascus, and I was stopped immediately at the airport. Now, the first signal that I, the first indication I had that Canadian government or Canadian agencies were behind what was happening in Syria, when I overheard the officers saying that the report that they stopped me based on, that why they stopped me was based on something they received from an embassy in April 2002. And once I heard the word embassy and connecting everything that was happening in my life before, it was clear the Kenyan government had something to do with it. First day I was almost in a few hours, I was transferred from one place to another. And in a few hours, torture started, it was a Friday night, and the torture did not end till the next morning, which was Saturday morning.
We're talking what year now, Abdullah?
2002.
Okay, this is July of
2000. This is May 2002.
May 2002, okay.
Yeah, I think, I guess we'll go to torture after, but you asked me the question about Canadian complicity, and maybe I'll give you the what we know of Canadian complicity now.
Okay.
So all the questions I was asked in Syria were questions related to Canada. I was never asked a question related to Syria itself. I was always asked about my business, my life, my people I know, Muslims I knew, Arabs I knew, and companies I dealt with in Canada and the States. What we know now, something that was very interesting as well, that many of the questions that I was asked in June, that is about a month after my imprisonment in Syria, a report came in or questions came in, and all the questions almost that I was asked, they were very similar to the questions that CSIS asked me before, about a year before here in Canada. And it was very striking for me because, you know, the questions are the same. I am the same person who's answering these questions. If they were hoping that they would get a different answer, the only difference is that the person who's asking the questions, he was asking it with a whip in his hand, not a pen. So it was clear that they were hoping to get different answers by having someone under torture asking me the questions.
That's Abdullah Al-Malki. Unfortunately, I have to cut that excerpt short because I want to hear from some of the other people involved in this Iacobucci Commission, the full interview with Abdullah. And Abdullah, I asked him, are you comfortable speaking about what happened to you? And he just didn't say yes. He said, it's absolutely important that I talk about it. He has a PowerPoint presentation, a very detailed website, abdullahalmalki.com, which is linked off the People's Commission website, that looks in detail at what that torture meant. So I encourage everyone to listen to the full excerpt of the interview when it's put up on the People's Commission website and the No One's Legal blog. But Abdullah Al-Malki is one of three other people that we know of, because there's probably others that we know of that were renditioned to torture in Syria. Another man is Muhyiddin Nuruddin, who was renditioned to torture. And the following is an excerpt from a demonstration that he gave during the caravan to end Canadian involvement in torture, a spring caravan that took place in Ontario, organized by Homes Not Bombs. And they're going to be doing another caravan this coming fall, again, to expose, much like the Torture Canada series in Montreal is doing, to expose this complicity. So we'll hear this excerpt with Muhyiddin Nuruddin, who again was renditioned to torture as part of this caravan to end Canadian involvement in torture that took place last spring in Ontario.
Mr. Muhyiddin Nuruddin, and I'd like to ask him three questions here. The first question is, could you tell us a little bit about your ordeal that you would like to express here to the Canadian people?
Yes. I was born in Iraq under a dictatorship regime. So in 1991, after the First Gulf War, I fled the country. I came to Turkey, then I applied to the United Nations, and we came to Canada as landed immigrant in January 1994. Now, in 2003, when the regime been toppled, I said to myself, this is the chance I go back home and visit my family in my city. I went there. I visited my family. On the way back to Canada, I have to catch my flight from Damascus. So December 11th, 2003, I am coming back to border between Syria and Iraq. So on the border, I handed in my passport. So I've been detained, and they told me you are wanted. So they sent me to Damascus, torture center, Farah, Palestine. It's military intelligence center. So they kept me there 33 days. And I've been asked exactly the same question that I've been asked when I left Canada on my trip to visit my family by two Canadian security agents. And they told me, we have a report on you. We know your name, your full name, and your passport number, and the exact amount that I had with me when I left Canada. So you're better off to tell us what you were doing in Iraq. Mm-hmm. So I told them only I was visiting my family. I never been there. And after the regime been toppled, I'm visiting my family. He said, you're a liar, and he didn't trust me. So they started torturing me.
That's a short excerpt of an interview of Mouayed Nureddine. My apologies for those tech glitches. There's a lot of audio here. Mouayed Nureddine is one of the so-called Yakubuchi Three. Yakubuchi is Frank Yakubuchi, a former Supreme Court justice who is supposedly doing a commission into what happened, and he is, but it's completely secret. And as Abdullah Al-Malki pointed out in my interview with them, as Mouayed Nureddine has pointed out, this just continues the torture because they want an open, transparent process. What it looks like to them, and they say so quite openly, is that this is simply a process to make sure that those CSIS officials, that those RCMP officials, that those diplomatic officials, and that those government officials will never come to justice, that we'll never even know their name. The entire inquiry is so private and so behind closed doors. The third member of the other Arars or the Yakubuchi Three is Ahmed Almaty. He is not so outspoken, which is very understandable. It's understandable in all their cases when you're a survivor of torture. But this is a short excerpt, again, from the caravan to end Canadian involvement in torture. It's very short, but Ahmed Almaty basically lays out the issues.
I've been detained and tortured for 2.5 years in Syria. I need somebody from CSIS right now to come and look me in the eyes and tell me why did they subcontract my torture.
The secrecy in this inquiry is a continuation of torture. I'm calling on Prime Minister Harper for a full, open inquiry into our cases.
So that's Ahmed Almaty laying it out very clearly. He wants those people from CSIS to look him in the eye and tell him, why exactly did you subcontract me to torture? And he's certainly speaking for Abdullah Al-Malki, Mouayed Nureddine, Meher Arar, and probably many others. And he's also asking the Prime Minister, the government, the Canadian people, for a full public inquiry into what's happened, because unlike the O'Connor Commission, which had its problems, which wasn't even fully transparent, unlike the O'Connor Commission into what happened to Meher Arar, this process is entirely in secret. And Ahmed Almaty doesn't shy away from saying that is a continuation of torture. We'll take a short break and come right back with more about Torture Canada on No One Is Illegal Radio.